Hello, Insiders, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. This is your host, Bruce Ash, coming to you live, along with co-host Eb Wilkinson from the mothership of the Bustos Media Juggernaut in the Perfection Auto Works Studios, welcoming you to an action-packed University of Arizona homecoming edition of Inside Track.
Eb? Before we get to our other guests this afternoon, we're going to hear a quick message from our friend, Onita Davis, from Wreaths Across America. Onita, take it away.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
We're great. Onita, we got about 4 minutes for you, sweetie. Let's talk about wreaths.
Just want to remind you of two important dates. The deadline for donations to Wreaths Across America is November 28th. And the laying of wreaths will take place December 16th at 10 a.m. at any of the local cemeteries. We are in dire need of wreaths at all the cemeteries. So if you have the ability to give, we're asking you to please go to Wreaths Across America. And you can donate through the American Legion Auxiliary at wreathsacrossamerica.org/AZ0011. P as in Paul.
Onita, Eb here. How much are wreaths?
Wreaths are now $17.
It's a bargain.
Over 15. It's still a bargain at 17. And if you go online, you can, of course, use your credit card.
I'm going to go online
Any
today and do that.
Gentlemen, please do. We certainly would appreciate your support. We are still supporting Marana. And right now, Marana is only at 42%. That means we need over 2,000 wreaths.
Well, I've supported you every year, so has Bruce. We're going to make sure we do it again. Thanks, Onita. Bruce and I will be writing our checks to help you out here in Tucson. And insiders, please send your check to decorate a vet's gravesite this holiday season. Bruce?
Before we hear from our special guest, author and lawyer David Moskowitz, in the interest of time, Eb and I want to throw a quick shout-out to our great Inside Track supporters, Eb Wilkinson from Wilkinson Wealth Management, Eric Rudin at Essential Pest, Jamie and Craig at Tucson Iron and Metal Retail, and our newest sponsor, Mike Emery at Perfection Auto Works, where he and his team make autos great again. Eb and I support each of these locally owned, family-run businesses. So should you. As always, we're thankful for producer Tom running the board today. He'll be taking your relevant calls for our guests today at 790-2040. On to our first guest. He is retired lawyer and author David Moskowitz from a great Philadelphia area suburb in Chester County. We talked a little before the show today. We both share a love of college basketball. He, a Villanova Wildcat, and me, of course, dressed in red and blue, even with my Wildcat socks on, the Arizona Wildcats. Mr. Moskowitz has written a new book, The Judge and the President, Stealing the 2020 Election. Mr. Moskowitz has written previous books, The Judge and the Philosopher and The Judge and the Umpire. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And we appreciate you taking us up and accepting our information, our invitation. David, your latest book focuses on the 2020 presidential election, which was very controversial, but there have been some other controversial presidential elections. What makes the 2020 election controversy so different from the others?
Well, the most important factor would be the effort to prevent the peaceful transfer of power after the election, which, of course, culminated in a riot. Maybe it's an insurrection on January 6th.
So just as a quick follow up, there was a considerable effort to change the 1880 election
at that time. 1876.
I'm sorry, 1876. You're right.
Yes.
And subsequent to that, laws were changed to avoid some of the problems that we saw in 2020. Correct.
Right. We have the Electoral Count Act as a result of that dispute.
Right on. I'm gonna ask my co-host, Eb Wilkinson, to follow up with you.
Before I asked what I was going to, tell me about the Electoral Count Act and why that's important.
David?
Yes. I'm sorry, did you want me to answer that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Method for electing a president is a combination of national law from the Constitution and congressional statutes, state law and local law. And so you have to add all of those together with customary rules to come up with the process that we have. I describe the process in detail in the book. The inside information I have comes from the fact that my wife was an elector. So she was one of the 306 people who voted for Biden when the Electoral College met. The system is that the, and stop me if I'm going into too much detail.
Oh, go ahead.
The system is that the members of the Electoral College do not all meet together. They meet in their respective state capitals, and that was to prevent foreign interference in the election. Moreover, they cannot be federal officials, so they can't be people who are active in the government, in the federal government. And finally, they are the people who actually vote for the president. So you don't vote directly for the president in your state. You vote for the electors from your state. There are 538 electors nationally, and you need 270 votes to be elected. Biden won the election by 306 votes, so that's how he became president.
I think that's a good background for what we need to talk about next.
So knowing that, the 2020 election was complicated by COVID. Some say that some of the rules of the 50 statewide contests, especially battleground states affected by COVID changes made by states, impacted the outcome in the states where the voting margins were very close. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that COVID did have an impact. There was a tremendous increase in write-in votes because people were reluctant to go to the polling places. And that had a dramatic effect on Trump not winning the election because he started complaining that the election would be rigged even before the election. And that made, I believe, I've never seen numbers on this, but that made some Republicans reluctant to use mail-in ballots, and Democrats apparently were not as reluctant, and that may have had a dramatic impact on his losing the election.
Well,
he has since changed that, and he now supports write-in ballots.
Right, and I would also add, David, I think the former president helped lose the two Senate seats in Georgia for the same reasons, because he was urging people not to vote by mail in those elections.
Yes. And of course, one of the outcomes of this process is that there were alternate electors who also met when the legally elected electors met in the seven battleground states, which includes Arizona.
So since the last election, there have been a number of civil lawsuits and criminal complaints filed against President Trump in New York State, in D.C. by the Department of Justice, and under RICO violations in Georgia. As a legal professional, which of these complaints do you think poses the greatest threat of a guilty plea against President Trump?
Well, of a guilty plea or a guilty verdict? Because I'm not optimistic that Trump
verdict
will actually plead guilty, though he may ultimately, in order to avoid a potential prison sentence. I don't think he'll ever end up in prison, by the way. I think that regardless of whether he's found guilty or enters a plea deal, it won't involve him going to prison. But be that as it may, the alternate elector situation is really fascinating. It wasn't known at the time of the election that there was a conspiracy conspiracy, I'll call it. There was an agreement to have alternate electors in the seven battleground states. And there were 84 then total alternate electors in those seven states. And obviously, if the alternate electors' votes were counted, Trump would win and Biden would lose. The alternate electors in five of the seven states, and this is now my legal opinion, committed a crime of filing a false governmental certificate. The document that they signed looks exactly like the one that my wife signed, who was a validly elected elector, that the other electors signed. It looks exactly like the same form. And after it was signed, it was sent to the four places it has to be sent to: the National Archives, the local federal district court, and the Congress, and to the Secretary of State of the state. Now, you'll find, I think, this interesting. In two of the seven states, there was no crime, because in those two states, the alternate electors placed a disclaimer in the document. They did not place a disclaimer in the one signed in Arizona or the other four states. So the two states in which there was no crime committed as related to the alternate electors are Pennsylvania and New Mexico. In Pennsylvania, the Republican Party, the state Republican Party, had a very good lawyer. And when the question was posed to him, is it legal to sign this certificate, even though Trump did not win in Pennsylvania, the lawyer said, well, we won't sign it unless we're given an opinion letter from a national law firm, which is then authenticated by a Pennsylvania law firm that it's consistent with Pennsylvania law, that assures us that we will not be committing a crime. He never got that opinion letter. Instead, he got an email from Kenneth Cheesebro, who is one of the defendants who has pled guilty in the Georgia RICO case. He got an email saying, I would advise you that signing it is, this is his word now, dicey. Based on getting that opinion from Kenneth Cheesebro, the lawyer inserted in the certificate that the Pennsylvania electors signed a disclaimer saying this certificate will be effective only if Trump prevails in a case in which it's proven that there was fraud in the election in Pennsylvania.
Are you basically stating that if the other five states did the same thing, then there would be no fraud there?
That's right. I think that disclaimer protects the ones who had the disclaimer. The ones who didn't have the disclaimer are filing a document that looks like an official document, signed, in some cases even had the state seal on it. And I think that was a crime that they committed. In Michigan, the 16 alternate electors have been indicted. In Georgia,
yeah, let's talk about Georgia, because there have been guilty pleas by Mark Meadows and lawyers Sidney Powell and David Cheesebro. So what do you expect the impact of their cooperation might be in the prosecution against Mr. Trump?
Okay, one correction. Mark Meadows hasn't actually pleaded in Georgia. It's there are four who have pleaded guilty. One is Cheesebro, who I already mentioned, Sidney Powell, who, by the way, also has an Arizona connection. Sidney Powell, another lawyer, pleaded guilty. A third lawyer pleaded guilty, Jenna Ellis. And the fourth was a bail bondsman by trade named Scott Hall. So those are the four indicted co-conspirators in Georgia who pleaded guilty. Now, what was your question?
So what do you expect the impact of their cooperation might be in the prosecution against Mr. Trump?
I think the impact, it creates a great danger for the other co-defendants, because as part of their plea, each of them agreed that they would testify in the Georgia RICO trial and in all other trials, and that they would testify truthfully. And if they were to dishonor that commitment, the plea deal would be withdrawn, and they would be sentenced to a healthy sentence. So they actually received, in my opinion, very good deals from the district attorney. None of them are going to jail, and they pay fines. And the Powell received a much better deal than Cheesebro, which makes me think that Powell has better testimony to offer the prosecutor, and thereby was qualified to get a better deal. But all four of them have agreed to testify against the other defendants. It's an interesting aspect of a Georgia, of any RICO case. I make the analogy. I only tried one RICO case in my career. I make the analogy that it's like going to a Saturday morning basketball court to play pickup basketball, and you select the teams when you get there. And after the first game, the teams change and your team members change. So you have different team members in the second game, and other people you were played with in the first game are now the opponents. Well, that's what happens in a RICO trial. You start off with 19 defendants, and if you're one of the defendants, you don't know which side the other defendants are going to end up being on. And now we know that at least four of the 19 are on the prosecution side. They will testify for the prosecution. So that has to have a tremendous impact. And not only that, I think it will encourage other members to also plead guilty. One thing you don't hear, the commentators who discuss the RICO trial, and they're excellent, and they have a lot of experience. They're primarily prosecutors. But one aspect of being confronted with a RICO trial like the one in Georgia is the trial could take 3 to 4 months, and your legal fees could be $500,000 in that ballpark, plus you're sitting through the trial for 4 months. You're not earning any income while you're doing that. So the economic impact on a defendant who can enter a plea deal if he gets a deal like the other four received, which involves no jail time, a relatively minor fine, not minor is maybe the wrong expression, in the $10,000 range, and probation for 3 to 5 years. And if you're a first offender, it gets expunged at the end of
the possibility of losing
period.
Some will lose their law licenses as well.
Yeah, that's the difference between Cheesebro and Powell. Powell only pled guilty to misdemeanors. Cheesebro pled guilty to a felony.
Mm-hmm. David, let's move to
And they might also, if they go through the trial, not only have the expense, but they run a serious risk of being convicted.
Sure. David, let's move to the D.C. case filed by Jack Smith. How strong do you really think the threat of conviction is against the former president on the charge of obstruction? This would be on the presidential records seizure at Mar-a-Lago.
Well, On the seizure documents case, I think there's a real possibility that that'll end up with a hung jury. And the reason I say that is A, you're in Florida, and Trump has strong support in Florida. You have to pick a jury of people who are not biased for him or against him, and that may be somewhat difficult to end up with. And it has to be a unanimous jury, so you only need one person on there who you can't, the other jurors can't convince to convict, and you end up with a hung jury. And I think there's a very real possibility of that in the records case. Not that the events didn't happen, and not that he wasn't wrong in taking them, but other presidents and vice presidents have done the same thing, and they haven't been prosecuted. And I think he might very well not be convicted in that case. And if he's not convicted, I would predict they wouldn't try him again.
So, David, some have claimed that the judicial temperament of the judges in the New York fraud case and D.C. obstruction case are a problem. If you were defending Donald Trump, how would you defend your client against what some view as extreme judicial prejudice?
That is a very, very difficult question.
Well, we don't ask easy questions here, David.
Yeah. That's why we asked you. You're
first
smart.
Of all, it's very hard to predict jury verdicts. I can't tell you how many times I've been surprised at the verdicts, sometimes happily surprised and sometimes bitterly upset. So it's very hard to predict. The two cases that you mentioned, the DOJ case in Washington, D.C. and the Georgia RICO case, are both going to be jury trials. The case where Trump has the most exposure, because it's not a jury trial and because the judge, from Trump's perspective, could appear to be hostile, is the New York fraud case, the one in state court in New York, which is going on now, in which Trump is going to testify in next week. For some reason, his lawyers didn't ask for a jury trial in that case. It was a terrible mistake that they made, and the judge has already decided he was guilty. I mean, that's clear.
Yeah.
So now we just have a trial and a decent hanging.
Yeah, you have a trial, and of course there'll be an appeal. I think he's got very real exposure there due to the lack of a jury. I think the having a jury in the documents case will probably save him in that case.
David, I hate to do this. We need to wrap it up. We're coming to the end. David Moskowitz, his book is The Judge and the President, available on Amazon. Thank you so much for joining us today. And even if we don't see eye to eye on the topic, we honor your right to express your opinions. And best of luck to you.
Thanks, David. Great conversation. And happy to be a fellow Wildcat, even though you're one of the Wildcats from the East Coast.
Okay, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Great, right. And we're going to take a short break to give everyone a chance to hear from our great sponsors. No channel flipping. We'll be right back with Blake Masters, who's just announced he's running for the congressional seat in CD8, now held by Debbie Lesko, who is not running for re-election. Stay tuned.
Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
Have you been taking your car to the Wicked Witch of the West for service?
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little fuel injection system, too!
Hi, this is Mike Emery at Perfection Auto Works, and despite rumors to the contrary, I am not
the great and powerful Wizard of Oz
of car repair. I do, however, enjoy performing miraculous recoveries on your family car or your exotic Jaguar, Mercedes, or Toyota. We specialize in Honda, Kia, Buick, Ford, Chevy, and even your grandmother's 1939 Packard. Call Perfection Auto Works at 323-8650. That's 323-8650 or perfectionautoworks.com.
There's no place like Perfection Auto Works. There's no place like Perfection Auto.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Some people view market declines as a time to panic. Good news, that's wrong. Markets have never gone down and then failed to come back to create new highs, and this time it's not different. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call Eb Wilkinson at 777-1911. That's 777-1911. Welcome back to Inside Track, broadcasting from the Perfection Auto Works studio, sponsored by Wilkinson Wealth Management, woohoo! Essential Pest, Tucson Iron and Metal Retail, and Perfection Auto Works, where Mike makes autos great again. And now to our guest, Blake Masters, 2022 GOP candidate for Senate. Blake has created some news on his future political plans. Blake, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Great to be back.
Hey, tell us about your future plans, because we don't get much actual news down here in the dark blue Tucson.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to be running for Congress up in CD8, Congressional District 8. Wasn't expecting Congresswoman Debbie Lesko to retire, but she announced her retirement, I think about 2 weeks ago today. And I'll be moving up there, you know, the Glendale, Peoria area, maybe Anthem, New River. My wife and I quite like it up there, so we'll be getting a house. And I put my name in the ring to succeed Debbie Lesko as the next congressman for AZ8, and I'm very excited.
Well, Anthem's great because it's got the Ben Avery shooting range right next door, so I recommend Anthem.
You read my mind. What a nice facility. And
I was just up there Saturday shooting 1,000-yard targets. It was wonderful.
Oh, awesome.
So before we go any further, how do people find out more about you and send contributions to your campaign?
Love it. Thank you. You just go to BlakeMasters.com.
Not Brake Masters, but Blake Masters, right?
We give you
That's
an honest
correct,
Blake.
Although it's like, you know, because I grew up here in Arizona, and my whole like third grade was just getting made fun of, right? Brake Masters and the whole jingle. But I think that helps me now with my name ID, right? That and the $100 million that the Democrats spent attacking me last cycle.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to let Ed come back here in a second. I went on your Wikipedia page that I hadn't seen for a while. Jesus,
oh,
which is the guy that they're describing here? This is like some monster, okay, that just like came out of the Black Lagoon. I mean, who writes these things, for crying out loud? It's unbelievable.
Well, Wikipedia skews far left at this point. And the funny thing is, you know, if me or my team ever logged in, because Wikipedia, it's supposed to be, you know, communal edit.
Right.
If you log in and correct something, even you just correct it from being wrong back to being true, they'll say, oh, Blake Masters is scrubbing his Wikipedia page. You know, so Wikipedia is useless at this point. I don't even check it anymore.
You'd have to strike everything that they wrote.
Except your name, and that's even questionable. Hey, Blake, one of the other talk show hosts here in Tucson asked why you're not going to oppose Juan Ciscomani here in southern Arizona. So for our listeners who may not have caught your answer, please let them know why you're running to fill in the seat which current House member Debbie Lesko plans to step away from.
Yeah, it's a fair question. And I remember telling him, look, do I wish Juan Ciscomani were more conservative? Yes, I do. I think I'm you know, decidedly more conservative than Juan. Do I wish that this district down in Tucson was more conservative? I do. But you know what? It's not. I'm actually grateful to Juan for running last cycle and for beating the Democrat. He took the seat back from Democrat hands. Now it's at least in Republican hands. And if you look at 2022, you know, Kerry Lake lost that district by, I think, 5 or 6. I think I lost it to Mark Kelly by 6 or 7. It is not a conservative district. It's not a Republican-friendly district. And while I wish Juan and the district were more conservative, he might be about as conservative as can win a general election down there, right? So I want more Freedom Caucus members in the House. When I get to the House of Representatives, I want to pull the caucus to the right and really stand up and defend our conservative principles. We also just have to be politically smart and recognize not every district is the same. The Tucson district is pretty blue. CD8, where I'll be moving and running, is a nice ruby red R plus 10 Republican district, and I think it demands a very conservative America First patriot to go and represent them in Congress, and that's what I intend to do.
So with all this inflating within the GOP House Conference, it's been pretty messy this year after a narrow win in 2022. What are your observations about the recent events?
Well, you know, you could say all's well that ends well, and I still think, you know, we need to see how Speaker Johnson governs, but I'm very optimistic. I mean, he might, on paper anyway, he's the most conservative speaker that we've had in a long, long time.
Yeah.
So I'm very optimistic. I think McCarthy was a lot better than McConnell. I think Mitch McConnell's the absolute worst. He's a paragon of the establishment. He needs to go. He obviously thought I was too conservative and too independent-minded to be in the Senate. When McCarthy made that deal back in January, it seemed for a few months like he was sticking to it, and I think that was healthy. Unfortunately, things got sideways when he sort of failed to honor the promise to do single subject appropriations bills. And so what happened. It looked chaotic for a while, but now we have Speaker Johnson, and we got to get it together and be united behind Speaker Johnson so that we can go and beat the Democrats. I would like to see a bigger majority in the House. I am worried because of the redistricting and, you know, issues in New York that we might actually lose the House. And I think that would be devastating. So I want a bigger Freedom Caucus, I want a bigger House majority, and I want all Republicans. Again, we don't compromise on principle. We don't go to the center. That's how you lose over time. I want to bring the center to the right and actually have a meaningful, unified conservative party to fight all the craziness that we see the left is pushing on us.
Blake, Bruce Ash back with you. The issue on the minds of a lot of Americans is about the current crisis in the Middle East. Do you think America's handling of the crisis has really been with the proper support for the state of Israel? And specifically, what's your view of the attempt by America to force a humanitarian pause while hundreds of hostages are still being held by Hamas terrorists?
Well, I think the humanitarian pause, so to speak, it's just, it's Blinken-esque, it's Orwellian, it's just BS. This idea that Israel should pause and not retaliate for the crazy, murderous, just terror spree that Hamas committed is crazy. And shame on Blinken and shame on Biden. First of all, I think Biden's policies caused this. You know, Biden is just sending unchecked billions of dollars to Iran. They say for humanitarian purposes. Well, come on, money's fungible. Iran is sending that to Hezbollah. It's sending that to Hamas. I'm pretty sure Iran planned this mass murder of Israelis.
And to continue developing... And to continue developing a nuclear weapon, most likely.
That's right. That's right. No, they negotiate with terrorists, and then we see what happens, right? And Biden's policies, you know, throughout higher education, it's just breeding an entire generation of idiot, you know, college grads who are anti-Semitic, who are anti-Israel. People don't even believe that Israel should exist, and that's just crazy. So I think we need to support Israel. I don't think it should be tied up with support for Ukraine, right? I don't want to send more money to Ukraine. I think that's just making World War III more likely. But I do think the U.S. should stand strongly with Israel and support Israel, right? We don't need boots on the ground over there. The Israelis are happy to take care of this problem, right? But we should send some money. Usually they just go and buy U.S. weapons with it, right? It's a win-win.
Right.
And let them take care of their jihadi problem in Gaza. They know how to do it. We just need to support them.
So, Blake, do you agree with Prime Minister Netanyahu that there will be no pause until all the hostages are returned?
Yes. Absolutely. And you know, these are women, these are children. The hostages, thank God, they're still alive, right? Many thousands of Israelis are not now because of Hamas's murder spree. But I think there's still like 11 Americans. This is an attack on, it's a terroristic attack on Americans as well. There's 11 or 12, I think at last count, American hostages in Gaza. And we need to be working to get them out, and there can be no safety and no quarter for Hamas terrorists ever. It's just, you know, my dad taught me this when I was 10 years old. It's something I'll never forget, and it just continues to ring true. If Israel stopped fighting, if Israel put down their arms, they would be overrun by Islamic militants. if the Islamic militants put down their arms, if Hamas just stopped firing rockets and murdering Jews, there would be peace in the Middle East.
I'd correct you maybe just a little bit. They'd start attacking one another the way that the Houthis and the Saudis have been going at it, the way that the Iraqis were fighting with the Iranians back in the 80s. They'll go after the next target, which isn't Jews. But you're right. I mean, Israel wouldn't be fighting anybody. They're not interested in territorial gains. They just want to live in peace. They want to raise their families, you know. So, Blake, I think I'm maybe more informed than a lot of people about Israel in the Middle East. I've traveled there nearly 30 times and done a lot of work, particularly in the south of Israel, where the attacks were on 10/7. Judging by the statements of Secretary Blinken, it seems like he and Biden are trying to shove their hand right up Netanyahu's rear end and prevent Israel from defending herself, calling for this pause, talking again about a two-state solution. There is no interest in a two-state solution by Hamas at this time. What's your assessment?
I agree with you, and it's really sad. Functionally, I think it's just anti-Israel and anti-Semitic for Blinken and for Biden to be acting this way. You know, there needs to be retaliation. There needs that Israel needs to be free to take care of this problem. Gaza, you know, look, there's innocent Palestinians, you know, that aren't affiliated with Hamas, kids and stuff like that. And I regret that there's you know, going to be some collateral damage. But it's only because Hamas insists on using women and children as shields, right? They'll put military headquarters in the basement of a school or a hospital. Hamas wants innocent Palestinian civilians to die so that they can just, you know, feed that information to CNN and the Biden administration, which is basically a propaganda arm of Hamas at this point, right? It's just so anti-Israel. I'm sick of it. It's anti-democracy. The left blathers on about democracy, right? Well, when the one actual democracy in the Middle East is attacked like this, they call for an immediate ceasefire on humanitarian grounds. Right, just let yourself be slaughtered and don't fight back. I don't think most Americans are down with that.
Like in the most amazing news dump, there were widespread reports this week leaked that the White House does not believe Bibi Netanyahu will survive the war and he will be replaced. Would you? I think it's astonishing. Do you agree with me, especially coming from America, who's traditionally been Israel's best friend? I mean, this just seems like, you know, treachery on the part of Biden and his administration. Don't you think so?
I'm shocked to hear that, actually. I had not heard that. I guess I'm shocked, but not surprised, unfortunately, with this administration. It used to be support for Israel was a bipartisan issue, and I think that makes sense. I think it should be. Now, not so much. And you look who's driving, right, who's sort of culturally driving the left. It's the Squad. It's AOC. It's Rashida Tlaib.
The Hamas wing of the Democratic Party.
The Hamas will literally, they can't bring themselves to actually condemn what happened on October 7th. Functionally, they don't believe that Israel should exist, and I don't believe they should be in Congress. I think that's just, it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it is absolutely crazy. So what is your reaction to the virulent anti-Semitic demonstrations by Palestinian and American protesters who support Hamas and Iran's decision to remove Jews from the river to the sea? Isn't that about as anti-Jew talk as you can get?
It is. It is. And we have to remember, like, this slaughter on October 7th was the largest single day, you know, mass murder of Jews since the Holocaust. And you would expect universal solidarity for the Jewish people, for the state of Israel in the wake of that.
Yeah, and you're not...
you look at these college campuses and you have people marching against Israel. I mean, it really does just kind of peel back the curtain on how rotten so many of our schools, so many of our institutions of so-called higher learning really are. God bless all the donors to Penn and to, you know, Yale pulling their money. I want to make these schools feel the pain that happens when you let these idiot professors indoctrinate this whole generation of students. It's really scary, quite frankly.
And worse than that, the White House has not condemned any of this at all. That's disturbing. And when you have, like what you said, the Squad, who is leading the Democratic Hamas Party, saying, Biden, if you don't want to, you know, if you know what's good for you in 2024, you'll support Palestine.
Yeah, it's just crazy. And look, we've seen this movie before. We know where this ends. It is bad. We need to stop it. I mean, France has been having this problem for a long time, right? The Islamification of Europe. They were lax on their immigration. They let in sort of like unlimited illegal aliens, you know, lots of folks from Muslim countries. As President Trump would say, they're not always sending their best. And, you know, Jewish people in France have been attacked for years. People, you know, don't want to go and you know, wear a necklace with the Star of David on it. People are forced to put their faith and their identity, you know, in secret and hiding. And that's happening in Europe. We've seen it. It's scary. And now it's happening ever more in the United States.
In a way, it's driving us back to World War II.
Exactly. It's crazy. Now, there are some reasons for optimism. I do think there's sort of a counter backlash. I talk to a lot of gun store owners, you know, friends of mine who say, you know, Blake, in the last 4 or 5 weeks, you know, guns are flying off the shelves. And it's center left, you know, some left wing, some very democratic Jews who are going in and buying these guns, right? Saying this is not going to happen here. Biden says, why do you need an AR-15 with 30 rounds? He actually says like 100 rounds in the chamber, right? He has no
idea
the terminology.
Because it's easier to carry than a M50.
There you go. And because when, you know, there's a jihadi on every corner because of our open borders policies, we want armed citizens ready to take down anyone who would cause innocent people to suffer.
And then you get what's her name, Kamala Harris, tackling Islamophobia, putting in a big thing to combat Islamophobia. You know, Blake, I don't even own an Islamophone, so I don't know what she's thinking. So we got the border.
Islamophobia is not a problem in the United States. You know, it is the radical Islamic terror and the rise of anti-Semitism. Those are big problems, and we need to take care of them now.
And not just that, the border's a mess. The president won't admit there's a problem. His vice president, the border czar, won't go there. His homeland security chief won't say there's a problem. And in fact, says that the border's more secure now than it's ever been. They won't answer any questions, Congress's questions on illegal immigration whatsoever. And you've got hundreds of known terrorists, suspect terrorists, no, they're terrorists, identified coming to America. So what are your thoughts on that?
My hope is that it's not too late, but it just might be, and it's really, really close. We've let in, I say we, it's Biden. Biden and the people running his administration, right? They've let in close to 10 million illegal aliens since they took office. Close to 10. And so, look, a lot of those people are not terrorists, okay? I'm willing to say most of those people are obviously not terrorists, but 10 million people, right?
There are terrorists.
There's a few thousand terrorists.
Yeah.
There are a few, maybe tens of thousands. How many Hamas sleeper cells has Biden let in? How many, you know, rings of Chinese spies has Biden let in? These are
and
bad
Russia, you're forgetting the Russian
Indonesia,
spies.
From Uzbekistan, from Russia, right? This is no longer hardworking, you know, Mexican laborers trying to come over. I'm sure there are some of those, but like there's a lot of bad people sent by foreign governments. They can just walk right into our country. And, you know, I think we're going to have attacks. I do.
It only took 19 terrorists to bring down the Twin Towers and kill over almost 3,000 people.
And with that That's being right. said, the Democrats say the laws need to be changed, but that the current laws aren't being observed and there haven't been nearly enough money provided to properly man the border. So what will Blake Masters do to end this national security crisis that has largely gone unfixed, except under Trump?
I will get in there and use absolutely every bit of leverage and authority and cultural power, everything, the kitchen sink, to make sure that we secure the border, right? And we know how to do it. I mean, under President Trump, the border, look, it wasn't perfect, but it was pretty darn good because he implemented policies. He had the support of Congress, and his administration implemented policies that actually tried to solve the problem. It empowered Border Patrol to go and do their jobs. These brave men and women of Border Patrol, God bless them. It is such a tough job under the best of circumstances. Well, under President Biden, who's just hamstringing them by rescinding all of Trump's good policies, it's basically an impossible job. And a lot of the Border Patrol agents, you know, they just need support. They just need policies that will let them do their jobs. Now they have to just sit by and watch their own country being invaded. And sometimes they get in trouble if they even try to do anything about it. So it's the policies coming from the White House. That's what's causing this border crisis. You know, God willing, we're going to get Trump back in the White House in 2025 in January. And that's when the real work begins. Again, I pray it's not too late. We have to stay positive. As bad as the situation is, we have to secure the border yesterday, because a country without borders is not a country.
Bruce and I were talking the other day. On every we fly a lot. On every flight that we've been on this past year, it's been filled with illegals being sent at our expense, taxpayer expense, somewhere in the country to melt into the population. So would you support them being given a one-way ticket back to their country of origin?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, and it's administratively hard to, like, deport 10 million people or whatever, and there's actually a lot more illegal aliens in this country than that. So I'm definitely in favor of starting with the terrorists and the criminals, and we know a lot of them, right? There's just right now in the Biden administration no political will to round them up and deport them. But I think we need to start there, and I actually think we need to see a lot more deportations. Right? People will say, oh, that's scary. That's very right wing. No, that's common sense. You don't let your country be invaded. When people come here and break the law, if their first interaction with our country is to break the laws, well, I'm sorry, they don't have a right to stay here. We can treat them humanely. We can be compassionate and all that. We'll get them a compassionate one-way plane ticket, right, to the country they came from. Or if that's not a safe country, it's in a different country. But you don't get to come here, break our laws, and expect to stay.
So the seat that you're running for is in a solid Republican district, as you had stated earlier. The fight for the nomination will be where a ton of money is spent. You were seriously outraised in 2022, so what do you plan to do differently for 2024?
Well, this time I plan to seriously outraise my opponents, and I think I'm on track to do that. You know, it was tough to compete with the $100 million that astronaut Mark Kelly had and all the Chuck Schumer bucks, especially when Mitch McConnell, again, decided I was too conservative and too independent-minded to be in the Senate. So McConnell didn't give me any air cover. And, you know, this time I'm just shoulder to the wheel. I'm raising money. I think I'm the one conservative candidate in the race that can actually raise the resources to make sure that the establishment candidate, who's Ben Thoma, doesn't win. I don't, you know, Ben might be a good guy. I think he is, in fact, but he's not as conservative as he needs to be. And I think he'd be a lobbyist's dream. And that's not who the people of CD8 want to send to the Congress. So I'm going to work hard. I'm going to raise money. My name ID is extremely high in the district. I'm the front runner, dare I say, in the polls. And we just need to remind people, I'm the most conservative candidate. I'm the one that stood against Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer. And I'll tell you what, if neither Mitch McConnell nor Chuck Schumer want me in the U.S. Congress, that's a pretty good sign. That means I'll be very effective there. And I think that's what the good people of CD8 will decide.
What do you think it's going to take money-wise to run this race?
A couple million dollars. You know, it's unfortunate, but here we are. I think a congressional race, you know, costs now what a Senate race used to cost. Everything costs 10x what it should. Some of these state legislative races, by the way, they used to cost about $100,000. Well, now those candidates have to raise about $1 million, you know,
right,
to keep a seat in the state Senate. So I'm, you know, I'll raise over $1 million this quarter. I'm sure of it. And I'll keep going for subsequent quarters. And, you know, I think, you know, some very good conservative groups really want to see me in, and I think they'll provide some air cover as well. So it's going to take a couple million dollars, but you know, last year I raised $12 million. So again, I'm the one America First candidate who can actually marshal the resources to make sure that we get a strong Freedom Caucus member from CD8 instead of sort of an establishment lobbyist kind of candidate.
And it's unfair to do this to you, but in 1 minute, that is all we have left. What are the two top issues which will separate you from your GOP opponents?
Well, you know, I think I probably will wind up differentiating on things like big tech, on things like the rise of China, right? Those aren't necessarily the top polling issues. Most people are concerned about the border. Most people are concerned about the crazy inflation that Biden has caused. My guess is most of my competitors agree the border should be sealed and illegal immigration is bad, and we should stop spending so recklessly to cause this inflation. Where I really stand out is my understanding of these tech issues, right? How was Mark Zuckerberg able to spend his tech fortune to influence the 2020 election, to put the thumb on the scale for Biden? How is TikTok working with the Chinese Communist Party to harvest our teenagers, our children's data, right, to use it against us in the future? I understand the threat that big tech faces. I understand the threat that China faces, you know, reindustrialization and stopping the so-called free trade policies with China that just weaken our country, hollow us out. I think I can speak much better and much more persuasively and then legislate accordingly than my fellow candidates. So I think I've got that X factor, you know, I'll vote the right way, but it's also about kind of leadership do you show when you get to Congress and I understand this stuff better than a lot of current sitting
Blake
members.
Blake Master, candidate for U.S. Congress and CD8, thanks so much for joining us today. Tell us again, how do our listeners find out about you and give more to your campaign?
Thank you. Just go to BlakeMasters.com. This is a grassroots campaign, so if you can swing it, I know it's tough in the Biden economy, but if you can swing $5 or $10, we'll put it to good use. Send me to the House of Representatives, and I promise I will do what I say I'm going to do.
That's
going to
do it for
our BlakeMasters.com.
That's going to do it for hour number one on Inside Track. When we return, we'll hear from a new family, student-friendly PAC, which is helping conservatives running for school boards, one of the most overlooked positions for years, but no more. We'll return right after the news. No channel flipping. Stay tuned. Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. What other kind of customers do you have?
So our biggest customers are actually like ranchers and people from outside of the Tucson area. They're buying a lot of square tubing. They're buying a lot of stuff for their ranch to close off fences.
We'll sell anything from 10 feet to 10,000 feet to somebody that comes in because we have new steel and surplus steel from steel mills. The reason we're able to get such good pricing on some of this stuff is A, we sell scrap to the mill. So we have a relationship there, and then we can buy material, what they're making, bringing it back. And so we save on freight, and we have relationships for years with them. So I think that's really our niche market. We'll sell whatever you need.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
It was a different time when you knew you had to be home when the streetlights came on. And dinner was ready, and all were there, and Dad gave thanks. When the entire family got into the Studebaker Lark for the summer vacation, and you stopped at Stuckey's and had a thick chocolate shake. And the times you heard that bell when you pulled in for gas, and an attendant started out by cleaning your windshield, and you got a frosted Southwest glass when you filled up at 24 cents a gallon. When Mom prepared snacks when you were going to the drive-in theater for the Friday night double feature. When the neighborhood was excited that the Smiths just bought a new round-screen RCA color TV. When you received your allowance and went to Woolworth's lunch counter for the 35-cent lunch special, and then the Saturday all-day movie theater. And people were kind, and Christmas was a time when you would go downtown to see the city lit up in a wonderful display. There is a place that still captures small-town America, Perfection Auto Works.
The beauty of America's past still lives on at Perfection Auto Works, 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.